this is Danette Gorman from HelpSyriasKids.org. We are connecting the Hudson community with a Syrian refugee camp in Katarmaya, Lebanon. You're listening to WGXC ACRA.
Here to Go Radio, the fourth Tuesday of every month from 2 to 3 p.m. Why are we here? We are here to go. Here to Go Radio.
Here to go here.
90.7 FM WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Bridge Street Theater in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
The FCC is choosing not to come up with a solution like this by its own admission because it thinks it's hard work. And the amount of diversity we've lost, the amount of viewpoints we've lost, the amount of innovative programming options that we've lost, it can't even be measured anymore.
Welcome to Radio Survivor. We're here for the love of radio and sound. I'm Paul Riesmandel.
And I'm Eric Klein. And we love radio. We care about who owns the radio stations.
We care about who owns the radio stations because it tends to determine what is actually on those radio stations and how well it serves local communities and how well it serves smaller communities or smaller constituencies within communities and what is actually propagated.
Yeah, how many local voices you can hear on your airwaves, especially when it comes to, you know, those pesky commercial airwaves, which a lot of us in the Radio Survivor circles have written off for a generation. You know, if you love community radio, you probably don't much care for what's on the for-profit end of the radio
dial. Or you might have
had
a commercial station in your life or currently have one that you love and you saw disappear.
Yeah.
You know.
But it's been roughly 20 years since there were cool stations as a general blanket statement.
Yeah, 23 years. And yet so much has changed in our media environment, in our broadcast environment, and yet what has not changed is those ownership rules. It seems like they have not gotten with the times. There's been no way for them to respond to the effects of consolidation or to the entry of new competitors. And one has to say, well, why is that? Is someone asleep at the wheel? And the answer is sorta. And we're going to dig into that today. There's a recent decision made by the Third Circuit Court of Appeals based upon a challenge made to the FCC for their ownership rules, the things that they have proposed to do to change media ownership rules, challenged in court, went to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. It's been there for a long time.
A generation.
It's been there for 15 years. Not quite a generation, but 15 years. And the Third Circuit Court of Appeals just made another ruling. So when this happens, we have one man we turn to. His name is Professor Christopher Terry at the University of Minnesota, where he teaches media law. Christopher Terry from the University of Minnesota, welcome back to Radio Survivor. We had some pretty big news come to us from the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on September 23rd. And it does regard the FCC and something you've been following a long time and we've been following along with you. What happened?
Well, we have our fourth of four decisions from the Third Circuit dealing with the FCC's media ownership policy. And like the other three, it went pretty poorly for the FCC.
And so media ownership for newbies is, you know, means how many entities can control how much of our airwaves?
Yeah, that's the rules, but the policy itself is a much larger structure. It's basically how our media system operates, how it makes money, how it's laid out, how content is delivered and made. All of those things are relevant to media ownership policy. Mm-hmm. And what we have here is the FCC's now fourth in a row loss in court on that policy, stretching back all the way to 2004 and arguably basically every policy it's had since 1996's Telecommunications Act was handed down has basically not gone anywhere when it's come under judicial review.
And what is it that the FCC proposes to do, wants to do, that the court has found objectionable?
Well, this time that's actually a much longer story than it's been in the past. So to tell what we were just looking at, we have to go back a few years, all the way back to 2011. In 2011, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals did a review, then the second review, on the FCC's media ownership policy, which had been overturned in 2004. The FCC had had another set of hearings that ran from 2006 to early 2008. And then in 2011, those rules went to the Third Circuit Court of Appeals after a long battle about moving the case to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. But in 2011, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals told the FCC that its media ownership policy would be frozen, essentially unenforceable beyond the limits specified by Congress, until the FCC brought back a workable plan for women and minorities. And that was a real punch to the gut to the FCC. And after 2011, the FCC did really just the minimal amount of rulemaking and rule review. And eventually, both people who want less regulation, sort of industry folks, and people who want more regulation, the lead plaintiffs and other citizen petitioners, they kind of agreed to disagree, and they dragged the FCC back into court in April of 2016. The FCC had not done anything meaningful in the intervening 5 years, and although the two sides radically disagreed about what they wanted to happen, they made the FCC, they sort of agreed to make the FCC do something at all. That case went very, very badly for the FCC, and we talked about that when it happened a couple years back now. In response to that, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals ordered the FCC to do something, make a decision by the end of 2016. At the time, Tom Wheeler was still chairman of the FCC. We were still in the Obama administration. And in August of that year, just a couple months after the decision came out, the FCC sort of said, you know what? We're not going to do anything. Our decision is literally nothing. We are going to do nothing. And the same people went back to court to challenge that. But before that case went to trial, Donald Trump was elected. Ajit Pai was promoted to chairman of the FCC. The membership of the FCC changed hands a little bit and swung different ideologically. And then in November of 2017, the FCC issued a new media ownership order with very little to precede it. It was basically just a new order that just kind of came out of nowhere. And it came out of nowhere about the same time the FCC started monkeying with the net neutrality rules. So it didn't get quite as much press as it had in the past. But those rules, this reconsideration, as it was, basically overturned everything the FCC had ever decided on media ownership going back better than 15 years. So that case, that order, the reconsideration order, people tried to get a stay on it. They tried to limit its implementation while the litigation was going on. The Third Circuit kind of refused to do that, wanted to see where the chips fell. And in the intervening time, the FCC finally got around to releasing its minority ownership policy. It's called an incubator policy. And I've written extensively about what a joke this thing was. And we talked about it on the show a while back.
Yeah, it's like a buzzword that it's like an old buzzword now. The incubator concept.
So what we were looking at, what went to court back over the summer, and we talked about it at the time, was that the FCC was getting reviewed. The court was sort of mom and popping it and looking at the decision in 2016, which the FCC had basically overturned, with its decision in 2017 and the incubator policy. And the result of that oral argument, which went very, very poorly for the FCC back in June, and then the decision, which came out on the 23rd, basically sent the FCC entirely back to the drawing board. Rules that the court had previously sort of given tacit approval to, including the newspaper broadcast cross-ownership rule, which has been on the books since 1975, the court said you can't overturn that one either. And again, the issue is two-pronged. One, the FCC has absolutely no evidence to support its rulemaking decisions. There's no evidence at all that it will actually work. And two, the court didn't buy that the eligible entity program embedded in the incubator program would actually increase ownership by women or minorities in any meaningful way, something the FCC has defied the Third Circuit on now three times. Now, administrative law isn't sort of like a courtroom drama, right? It's not really exciting. There's not a prosecutor up there tearing some lying witness arm from arm. But the language that the Third Circuit used in the decision that came out on the 23rd was pretty graphic and very, very critical of the FCC. Very critical. And it's basically one step short of what the Third Circuit has threatened to do in the past, which is essentially tear down the entire structure of media ownership. So that's how we got here. And it's important for people to understand who followed this, and I recognize that I follow this a lot closer than most people do, that what has really happened here is that the Third Circuit has sent the FCC back to the drawing board about the equal of where we would have found ourselves between maybe 2000 and 2002.
And I think that I want to take a step back at this particular moment here, Chris, because I think calling out these dates, we could almost lose ourselves in it, but I think it's important to show some mile markers here. When you say that we're basically back to 2002, what you're saying is that is just somewhere between 4 and 6 years after the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which radically rewrote media ownership rule specifically for broadcast, where we saw the national cap on the number of radio stations a company could own lifted entirely, where we saw the limits for market ownership lifted, raised up, where we saw limits on television ownership raised up, right? And it is really we still feel the reverberations today, as we mentioned just a little bit earlier.
Yeah, it's an old saw on Radio Survivor and around these parts, but it's the moment when Gen X lost radio and it all got homogenous and boring, and mom and pop radio stations sort of disappeared and everything became a little bit more corporate.
Right. And as part of that, the FCC was ordered to review at that time biennially media ownership rules to adjust them, right, in order to sort of react to the market, to compensate. You know, it's sort of like riding the throttle, if you will. And what has happened, what I hear and what I see here is that it really hasn't happened. Is that, you know, if nothing substantial has changed since 2002, in effect, there's a whole lot of, it's a whole lot of smoke and almost no fire, a whole lot of friction, but no actual work is done here, Chris. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, I guess it depends on your point of view. It's not that nothing has been done. A lot has been done, but the FCC has failed at every turn. It literally has failed. part of its obligation under the 1996 Telecommunications Act is to adjust rules as necessary.
Right.
It has failed to do that at every point. And the rules that are on the book are exactly the same as they were in 1996, except for the one rule that Congress intervened in during this process and changed just a little bit, which was the television, the local or the national television ownership rule, excuse me, which they raised the cap from 35% to 39% of the national audience to accommodate some of the Fox owned and operated stations. It, you know, it was just sort of a gentleman's agreement to move it to when Fox acquired the New World Communication stations. They were just over the cap because a couple of those stations were in really big markets. But I mean, other than that, the rules that we're talking about today are exactly the same as they were in 1996 when Congress gave the FCC its instructions on media ownership.
And can I want to go out on a limb here, but maybe I'm not going out on a limb, but it, you know, my reading of it, and I followed it the entire time, not as closely as you, but that each of these sets of rules that the FCC has proposed along this time to make these adjustments to media ownership, they seem to me have been mostly coming up during, in air quotes, free market oriented FCC administrations and national administrations, Republican administrations. They've been pushing towards further loosening ownership restrictions. And what they keep getting called on, you know, whether it's during, whether it's sort of George W. Bush era administration or whether it's now a Trump era administration, what they keep getting called on is, if you're going to make these changes, we need some data and facts to back them up, to justify why further media ownership reduction limits, why further consolidation for all intents and purposes as an outcome, why that would benefit consumers, why that would benefit the industry, and of course as a corollary, why that would benefit women and minorities. Is that reading at all on top of it?
Yeah, no, it's that's about as accurate as it gets. Look, the FCC has to consider rules in terms of economic competition and the public interest. It's still required to do that. It cannot square that circle in any meaningful way with any evidence that suggests that the policy is working, will work, or has worked. In fact, by most assessments, it has not produced any of the effects that we were promised. And what
would those effects be as a media consumer and user? What would someone perceive as some of the effects that were promised here? What is it what is the great wonderland that happens when further deregulation happens?
Sure. Well, the idea was is that we could reduce the cost to operate media companies. They could make more money and still put in more resources to give us better programming options. And really, none of those things have happened. In real terms, I mean, the companies that the 1996 Telecommunications Act really created are companies like Clear Channel and Cumulus, right? Those were the two companies that leaped out to the front of the pack when it came to the changes in the ownership rules. And the ashes of those two companies are still smoldering just a little bit, but they're largely gone because the economic benefit never really materialized because the cost of media properties went up so high. And the only way that they could afford to pay for the stations that they bought was to reduce programming options to the barest and cheapest of minimums. And that's the part of the FCC's problem, right? The policy itself was implemented poorly, right? The FCC could have done this on a slower, more incremental approach and had a better idea of what to do and the effects of it.
But instead they opened up the floodgates, right?
No, they leaped in, and to be fair, it was a Democratic administration when they did it, right?
Sure.
This crosses across both parties. They leaped in head first. They were super excited about it, the neoliberal approach to economics, and it just went downhill. It's just been going downhill ever since. But what's problematic is that it's basically paralyzed now and has been for literally more than 15 years. The FCC has conducted 7 rule reviews since 1996. They were 2-year reviews in 1998, 2000, and 2002. And then after 2002, they were extended to 4 years. So they did one in 2006. They never finished the one from 2010. They basically never finished the one from 2014. And they launched one on literally the last possible day that they could in 2018. That one is still open. And what the Third Circuit told the FCC on the 23rd of this month was that you have to do this by the time that one's done. Now, that's a pretty stringent order in terms of administrative law, but it is also what the FCC was ordered to do in 2011 and again in 2016. Both times the FCC has not done it.
You know, so what kind of boggles the mind to me is that this seems Sisyphusian here, to continuously propose changes, the FCC to propose changes to further deregulate media ownership, only to have them swatted down one after another by the Third Circuit for the same reasons, right? So it's not as if these are they're making, and it doesn't ever seem like they're really going back and re-strategizing so much as making minor tweaks and throwing the same things up and letting them get bounced back. And it begs the question to me, why? Like, what is the purpose of continuously doing this? Is there some sort of other outcome or strategy at work here that isn't obvious at the surface?
Well, at some level, the FCC does this because they have to. The law says that they have to do this on a periodic basis.
So is this like a 13-year-old who does the worst possible job washing the dishes so that, you know, that their parents just throw up their hand and say, fine, we're not going to make you do it?
Well, I mean, I think the FCC would really like it if mom and dad at the Third Circuit eventually said that to them, but that's not going to happen. There is something that is different this time, and it probably bears mention at this point. Whenever the FCC has lost in the past, they've been very unhappy about the loss, obviously. But they sort of just kind of took their lumps and kind of slinked away and pretended to do stuff for a little while and then realized that they weren't going to get away with doing nothing, so they did something and sort of reset the cycle. This time, something else happened. Immediately after the decision came down on Monday, and it came down pretty quick from the Third Circuit this time. It's not a long opinion, by the way. It's fairly short. The 3 majority commissioners, Chairman Ajit Pai, Commissioner Carr, and Commissioner Mike O'Reilly, basically say they're going all in on an appeal. Now, that's different than what they've tried in the past. They've sort of just taken their lumps and walked away. But Commissioner O'Reilly especially was quite hostile in the release that he had on Monday night, Monday the 23rd, that night. He was, the language is pretty aggressive for him. He's sort of the nerdy one on the commission. And it looks like the FCC, rather than go do the dishes again, as you suggest, is going to go break the dishes in an effort to hope that they don't ever have to wash the dishes
again. And by appeal, that means they want to appeal to the full circuit or the Supreme Court?
Yeah, that's the next stop, is the full circuit. But I'm hoping they're hoping that this will go to the Supreme Court. Now,
people understand, it was a 3-judge panel, right, that made the decision for the Third Circuit Court of Appeals thus far. That's basically heard yeah, this case so far.
It's been the same panel the whole time. And again, in this order, which came out on the 23rd, Judge Ambrose is sort of like, here we go again, you know, we're still here. And even the last line in the decision is something about, well, we're sure this isn't over yet. We'll see you next time. You know, so, but the FCC has never really mounted a serious appeal of any of the Third Circuit decisions. It's sort of just taken its lumps and walked away. And it appears to be ready to make an aggressive push. So the first stop in an appellate review is the three-judge panel. The second step is an appeal to the full panel, which would mean all the judges on the Third Circuit would hear the case. Then, depending on how that goes, you would go to the Supreme Court. Now, this is going to get a bit in the weeds, and I'm going to apologize for that in advance. But there's very little issue that the FCC has here that's appealable. There's really not some sort of fundamental change in what's occurred here that suddenly makes it an issue that would be ripe to go up the food chain, including up to and including the Supreme Court. There's really no change. The decision that came out on the 23rd looks exactly like the one that came out in June of 2004, which says that your decision-making isn't rational. Go back and do it again. Come back here when you're ready to show us your homework. So I'm not really sure where the FCC is thinking that there's something different about the decision which came out, the most recent decision which came out, compared to the other ones. But I do have a theory. I do have a theory about why they're taking it so aggressively this time. And it kind of fits in with the larger picture. You want to take a guess what my suggestion is going to be here?
No, I have no idea, actually.
Okay. My belief is that if they appeal this decision, that will tie the process up for a very long period of time while that works its way through the court. And they won't have to complete the required 2018 review. So if they take it upstairs, that will take a significant amount of time. And then if they don't like how that comes out, they'll go to the Supreme Court, which will add time onto it. In the meantime, they won't have to make any decisions, and they can just stick this in a folder, lock it up in the file cabinet, and just wait for it to work itself out. It's essentially, to use your dish metaphor, it would be like taking the dishes out in the garage, leaving them on the shelf until somebody found them, and then you'd have to wash.
And buying some paper plates in the process.
And Christopher, this review that you're referring to that the FCC is required to do, again, is what? It's like a review of how media ownership is going in the United States?
It takes the rules, and it sort of – the way it's unique in administrative law. It's Section 202H. It's a really obscure passage in the Telecommunications Act. But it basically requires that the FCC – every 4 years, take a look at all of the rules it has on the book in terms of media ownership and determine whether or not they're needed. Now, why that's unique in administrative law is they basically have to treat the rule as if it's a new rule that they want to pass. When an administrative agency does that, when they have a new regulation that they want to pass, they have to have some form of empirical evidence that supports the decision to do that. And what the FCC has to do is essentially treat rules that are already on the books as if they're new. It's actually not easy for the FCC to do, but they're also not making any of the effort to actually do it either. So it's a double-edged sword. But there's plenty of precedent for the FCC sort of using the paper plates, to use the metaphor that you just went with there. And it's exactly what the FCC did after 2011. Remember that we only got to where we are today because after 5 years of foot dragging, the FCC got dragged into court by both sides who can't agree on anything.
And that would have been in the Obama era as well. That was a Democratic administration.
Right. So the FCC and some of the commissioners that are on the commission now were part of the commission then. I mean, O'Reilly was on the commission in 2016. Carr wasn't, but Pai was. And I even think Rosenworcel was when this came up last time. But here we are.